Jesus gonna be here. He's gonna be here soon. He's gonna cover us up with leaves and a blanket from the moon, with a promise and a vow and a lullaby for my bride. Jesus gonna be here. He's gonna be here soon. I'm not gonna do nothing. I don't have to shout. Got me no reason, and I got no doubt. I'm gonna get myself on the front from this mortal caught up world. Jesus gonna be here, gonna be here soon.
That's the five-time Grammy Award-winning gospel group, the Blind Boys of Alabama, formed at the Alabama Institute for the Negro Blind in Talladega in 1944. It's from their 2001 album, Spirit of the Century, and of course the song is Jesus Gonna Be Here, featuring vocals by Clarence Fountain, double bass, Danny Thompson, Michael Jerome on drums, David Lindley on electric slide guitar, Charlie Musselwhite on harmonica, and John Hammond on dobro. That's a guitar that kind of gives you some extra resonance. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and today the song gives us a kind of clue as to where we're going. And we're talking about God. We're talking about religion, and we're talking about politics. The 2016 presidential race has unleashed, it seems, a devil's brew of marketing ploys, chief among them a distinctly nativist American Christian religiosity. After all, U.S. Senator Ted Cruz, the senator from Texas, was the first to tout his evangelical credentials to the self-righteous. In early April, in a bid to woo evangelicals, his campaign ran a 30-second spot titled Blessing in Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada, the states, it so happens, that are the earliest in primaries. In the ensuing months, as you know, the candidates' religious beliefs and religion as a whole have featured prominently in media coverage of the presidential campaign. So we want to take a look today about this business of religion and how it is affecting and the presidential campaign of 2016. And we've been getting a steady dose of this from all kinds of angles. Who is righteous? Who is not? And of course, we're getting clearly the message that you're on the right side of things if you're not Muslim, but are Christian, but not just Christian. You have to be a super Christian. These things didn't seem to matter much. But increasingly in recent years, we're seeing it's almost a requirement that if you're running for office, you ought to have some kind of deep religious view. And clearly, a lot of the people talking about how religious they are. You take a guy like Donald Trump and talking about religion, it's huge. You know, yeah, he's quoting from he's talking about the Bible, trying his best to be a Bible thumper, but can't quite get too close to the verses, you know. And we're hearing the refrain again about Obama and the people associated with Obama, the party associated with Obama, and the question still hasn't gone away. Donald Trump being one of the first people to insist that his alleged Muslim religion, his Islamic roots, ought to be questioned, and he ought to be clearly declared as a Muslim, i.e., an enemy of the state, and it persists. So we see religion contrived really as a marketing ploy, but a very serious impact it is having in the 2016 presidential race. It is not accidental that just about all of the candidates so far have made it clear where they are spiritually, as if we care or should care about what their spiritual beliefs are. But somehow it matters. And it matters greatly. And in the world of politics, increasingly, religion, religiosity, spirituality, all these things are coming into the mix for no other reason than it helps in the marketing of things. Certainly, you were able to see the impact of this when Pope Francis, who has left the country and is back to Rome today, his appearance in Cuba, a nation that hadn't been overtly religious, and his appearance here in the United States, generating all of this outpouring of religiosity, interfaith religiosity, the souped-up Catholic response. It's amazing. And all of this being fed into a political tube, essentially, so that we are conditioned, because that's the job of the media, and they did a great job, we are conditioned now by watching coverage of this and reading coverage of this and hearing coverage of the Pope's visit and hearing repeated references by the candidates, whether obliquely or directly, about religion, theirs and others. We see that there is this insistence that it ought to matter to us. And that's where we're going today. And to prepare us for the discussion that we will be having in a minute, I thought I would go back to a candidate appearing on the scene leading up to his presidential run in 2008, and here he is giving a keynote address to the call for renewal of building a covenant for a new America, a conference that was given in 2006 in Washington, D.C. That person is Barack Obama. And here's what he had to say about his consciousness about religion and the role of religion in American politics.
But you know, today I'm going to talk about the connection between religion and politics, and perhaps offer some thoughts about how we can sort through some of the often bitter arguments that we've been seeing over the last several years. I do so because, as all of you know, we can affirm the importance of poverty in the Bible. We can raise up this covenant, we can pass it out, we can talk to the press, we can discuss the religious call for us not only to tend to issues like poverty, but also to tend to the broader issues of social justice and environmental stewardship. We can affirm all these important issues, but it won't have an impact unless we tackle head-on the mutual suspicion that sometimes exists between religious America and secular America. And I want to give you an example that I think illustrated this fact for me. Some of you know that during the 2004 U.S. Senate election, in the general election, I ran against a gentleman named Alan Keyes. And my opponent, Alan Keyes, was well versed in the Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson style of rhetoric, gets a little heated sometimes, a rhetoric that sometimes labels progressives as both immoral and godless. And in fact, towards the end of the campaign, Mr. Keyes announced to the people of Illinois that, quote, Jesus Christ would not vote for Barack Obama. Jesus Christ would not vote for Barack Obama. Christ would not vote for Barack Obama because Barack Obama has behaved in a way that is inconceivable for Christ to have behaved. Jesus Christ would not vote for Barack Obama. Now, I was urged by some of my liberal supporters to take this, not to take this statement seriously, to essentially ignore it. To them, Mr. Keyes was an extremist, and his arguments were not worth entertaining. And since at the time I was up 40 points in the polls, it probably wasn't a bad piece of strategic advice. But what they didn't understand was that I had to take Mr. Keyes seriously, for he claimed to speak on behalf of my religion and my God. He claimed to know certain truths. Obama says he's a Christian, he was saying, and yet he supports a lifestyle that the Bible calls an abomination. Mr. Obama says he's a Christian, but he supports the destruction of innocent and sacred life. So Mr. Keyes would say. And what would my supporters have me say? How might I respond? Should I say that a literalist reading of the Bible was folly? Should I say that Mr. Keyes, who is a Roman Catholic, should ignore the teachings of the Pope? Unwilling to go there, I answered with what has come to be the typical liberal response in such debates. Namely, I said that we live in a pluralistic society, that I can't impose my own religious views on another. I informed Mr. Keyes that I was running to be the United States Senator of Illinois and not the Minister of Illinois. But Mr. Keyes's implicit accusation that I was not a true Christian nagged at me. And I was also aware that my answer did not adequately address the role that my faith has in guiding my own values and my own beliefs. And my dilemma is by no means unique. In a way, it reflects the broader debate that we've been having in this country for the last 30 years over the role of religion in politics. For some time now, there's been plenty of talk among pundits and pollsters that the political divide in this country has fallen sharply along religious lines. In fact, the single biggest gap in party affiliation among white Americans today is not between men and women, or those who reside in so-called red states and those who reside in blue, but between those who attend church regularly and those who don't. Conservative leaders have been all too happy to exploit this gap, consistently reminding evangelical Christians that Democrats disrespect their values and dislike their church while suggesting to the rest of the country that religious Americans care only about the issues of abortion and gay marriage, school prayer, and intelligent design. And Democrats, for the most part, have taken the bait. At times, at best, we may try to avoid the conversation about religion altogether, fearful of offending anyone, and claiming that regardless of our personal beliefs, constitutional principles tie our hands. At worst, there are some who dismiss religion in the public square as inherently irrational or intolerant, insisting on a caricature of religious Americans that paint them as fanatical, or thinking that the very word Christian describes one's political opponents, not a people of faith. Now, such strategies for avoidance of the issue may work for progressives when our opponent is Alan Keyes. But over the long haul, I think we make a mistake when we fail to acknowledge the power of faith in people's lives, in the lives of the American people. I think it's time that we join a serious debate about how to reconcile faith with our modern pluralistic society.
Well, that was candidate Barack Obama. He was running for the U.S. Senate as a springboard, as it turns out, to his 2008 run for the presidency. And the irony in listening to this, in which, of course, he lays out very clearly, you know, a pretty rational argument about the role of religion and how it is used and abused in the arena of politics. This is the same man who, in 2008, would repudiate his own minister, his own spiritual leader, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who was simply preaching in the grand tradition of the black church, a very fiery speech, but that's what happens in the black church. And he was condemning racism in America. And it was used strategically as a weapon to dislodge, or to attempt to dislodge, Barack Obama's presidential bid, which was by then picking up a great deal of steam. And so Obama made the political decision, not the ethical one that he just talked about ethics and so forth. He made the decision that, nice to know you, Reverend Wright, but you got to go under the bus. So Jeremiah Wright was thrown under the bus, his whole career, his life's work, everything just absolutely throttled and destroyed in the name of political survival. So we see the role of religion because it is deep-seated in the United States. It is a very, very important political weapon, even though you would find from time to time polls that are showing that Americans really aren't, they don't factor religion that deeply into their political choices and their political decisions. Religion is a distant second, third, fourth down the road. But it's not necessarily true. It is not necessarily true. If you've been monitoring the tone of the current presidential cycle, you would see a sharp turn into the world, into this realm of religion that used to be kind of off limits. People used to talk about the issues, not about whether you're Muslim or Christian. And even if you were Christian, whether you are one of the good Christians or one of the better Christians or one of the bad Christians. You have people who are very conscious because now it's about marketing. You have to be marketed. And even a person that one would recognize as a true dyed-in-the-blood super capitalist like Donald Trump quickly got together his religious credentials and said, I'm a Presbyterian. Bobby Jindal converted. He was a Hindu. He is now a Catholic. You wonder, Pataki, the candidates across the board. You have you have Bernie Sanders saying, "Well, I'm Jewish, but not particularly religious." So he's dancing there with the question of a religious commitment, because he's recognizing that increasingly the nature of the dialogue here is going to require people to now use religion as yet another political litmus test. We have Jeb Bush, who converted. He's now Catholic. And saying these things, Hillary Clinton, you know, Methodist. Who should care about these things? And what is it supposed to mean to me that you're a Methodist, or in the case of Ben Carson, a Seventh-day Adventist? What should that mean to me? And what does that, in touting these religious cards, what exactly are you supposed to be communicating? In a very clearly political contest, why does it matter? How did it get here? So this is where we are going to open up the phone lines and get your thoughts. But I want you to be very analytical today. What we're looking for is your analysis of the role that religion has begun to play in the 2016 presidential race. What is it doing to politics? Does it have a place in politics? And to what degree is it being used as leverage in a pretty packed field to gain an advantage? Is it to be expected that as a voter you should care about somebody's spiritual groundings if they have them? Or if they have them at all? Is it on what do you base your vote, or do you base your political concerns? Does it matter what a person's religion is? These are the questions I'd like you to address today in the course of our discussion. And we'll take this break and come right back to your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Remember, I'm looking for an analysis. So I'd like you to give us something from both sides, something, quote, objective that you observe, and something quite subjective as to what it is you're actually thinking. All right, that's the charge today. 888-874-4888. We'll take this break. Some more from the Blind Boys of Alabama, and we come back to your thoughts right after this.
Keep myself faithful. You know I've been so good. Except for my sin, but he knew that I would. I'm gonna leave this place better than the way I found it was. Jesus gonna be here. He's gonna be here soon. Jesus gonna be here, gonna be here soon.
You're listening to PRN.FM, and you're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're talking about religion, which has come onto the political scene with full force in this presidential race, and being used in all kinds of ways to persuade the public, both about the candidates that are who are vying for the presidential office, and it's also about trying to shape public opinion about religion. What is it that you're supposed to be thinking as a voter? And causing people to now link definitely link your religious beliefs to your political choices. This is a careful and well-planned strategy. The media playing their role in constantly talking about religion and focusing on it as an essential ingredient in this race. But your task today is to discuss how this is expressing itself and what impact you think it's having in the race and beyond it. From Brooklyn, Sandra, you're the first up. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi, you, Therese. Good afternoon. My response to the question about religion is that instead of blatantly saying racism and want to put it in a black and white issue, they would separate the political spectrum discussion using religion or religiosity, because it seems like if you say certain type of Christians, you're talking about white America. And then if you say like Baptists or other, then you're talking about the brown in or the other Christians. So it seems like they want to use the religion instead of blatantly saying black and white. So in other words,
Sandra, who are the they that you're talking about here?
The they, I would say, the powers that be that controls, the media or whoever picks out the candidates to sway voters, certain, like you're a good person if you're a so-called Catholic or, that type of Christian compared to the others. In other words, the appointees of these candidates.
Okay.
And then if you want to convince the American public to sway them this way or that way, instead of blatantly come out saying, racist, well, we're good because, we're white and, we're, God-fearing people. Which is the jargon or the lingua. I'm from somewhere else, so I'm listening to the way I always hear things, putting it in perspective in my ears from the background that I'm used to. So I realize that. So it's not a new strategy; it's an old strategy. But it seems like things have changed. Like, in other words, at first, let's start out to be. Like the Christian thing. Then first it was like the total racism, like black people and brown people are like, nothing because they are like slaves or whatever, enslaved people. Then they start the religion. So it's the same thing, but in other words, they're just changing the language. And leaving God and all spiritual teaching out of everything that is good and love and good across the board and across the spectrum. So it is so pathetic to me that religion would be used as a divisive tool instead of the loving and the caring that all religion should be teaching, the loving and the caring of the human race and what's good for even in the political spectrum, what's good for the human race.
Do you believe in this cycle so far? I mean, it's still got a ways to go, but so far, based on the coverage and based on the way the candidates themselves are conducting their respective campaigns, do you find that there is a greater emphasis this time around on religion as opposed to a previous presidential races?
Far more. Like I said, it's the new, to me, the order of the day, in other words, I would put it. Like, okay, the Willie, what was it, Willie something? When it was used, the racial thing, like, I forgot the Willie somebody when either Bush was running. In other words, when you use, to me, it's like a new tactic. Like, okay, you use one and you expire that now. So now you have to come up with another tactic. It's still racist. But in other words, it keeps changing. The tactic is keeps changing. And just because they know that most public, American public, is like fickle or memory lapse. So in other words, you put something out and run with it and put that in the people's mind. Keep repeating it. Then you switch now to something else, like, in other words, like a menu, the order of the day, and now we're going to run with this. But in other words, the whole thing comes down to still racist, like we're good and the others are bad, and vote for us, and we'll bring, good old America back on its, feet of all good and good and good, which is not true. That's my opinion.
Thank you so much for getting the conversation started today, Sandra, from Brooklyn. We go to Chicago. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice, how you doing?
Good. And thank you for pulling my coat, our collective coat, about a diet. I don't know if you heard this, the program that we did on it.
Oh, yes, I did. Well, like I said, it's more of a community thing, and I just wanted the people to know about what was happening in Chicago in regards to that. So that's a long fight that's going to happen in the next couple of, months and years probably. But in regards to this topic about religion and politics, this thing, basically, the marriage of religion and politics is basically embedded in Western society for centuries. I mean, politics has been part of, religion has been part of politics since, the ancient times, So it's sort of like we've always had this marriage of religion and politics all through the centuries, especially, like I said, in Western society. So you look at religion, and religion is basically a mirror of cultural and ethnic, ethnic reflection of the people. So when you talk about modern-day religion, in America, which, to me is Protestant white Christians, you have these candidates who basically cater to the majority of, of that type of, people. So necessarily you have to, rule out or try to demonize the other religions, in particular Islam, and in a sense, Judaism and Catholicism, because of the fact that they don't go with, Protestant Christian teaching. So the thing is that it's being used as a tool to, to basically win the psyche of the, the modern American, person, because you even look at the presidency. Every president except two had the profile of being a male white Christian Protestant. And the only two that hasn't had that profile is our current president and John F. Kennedy, who was a Catholic. So I always look at that profile as who's been our leaders of this country, and white male Christian Protestants.
In that case, how do you interpret the comment or the assertion by Ben Carson that basically Muslims aren't supposed to occupy the White House? And who was he talking to? What was he saying?
Well, I mean, obviously he's basically referring to majority of people who, you know, who practice Islam. And as you know, in this country, majority of people who practice Islam is not, you know, Anglo-Saxon white people. So you have to look at it that in the ethnic and racial perspective of his comment as well. Because I don't find a lot of Muslims in this country who are, you know, like I said, Anglo-Saxon white. You know, most of the Anglo-Saxon white people's religion is Christian Protestant or, you know, Jewish.
Do you believe or do you find that increasingly one's religious leanings or lack of religious leanings, but in any event, religion is increasingly part of what is called the American identity?
Yeah, I think it's always been like that. I know people deny it, but I think it's always been like that as far as the American identity. Like I said, you know, the basic religion American identity is Christian Protestant. And that's the identity that they're going to adhere to.
Do you believe a Donald Trump, when he speaks or touts his Presbyterian credentials, do you believe a Hillary Clinton, when she touts her Methodist credentials, do you believe any of these folks when they tout their religious credentials in a way that says, this too is what I bring to this office? You can count on my sanctity, my honesty. My credentials are supposed to imbue me with a sense of, you know, I'm a moral person. I'm the correct person. I'm therefore the correct choice.
Oh, I believe in their objective, or how should I put it, you know, the thing about it is that I believe when they use religion as kind of like their moral perspective, they're talking to the unconscious spirituality of the American people, because of the fact that, you know, like I said, they're trying to identify with, you know, the American religious majority in this country. So the thing about it is that, and it doesn't mean like they're you know, pure moral, you know, they just, you know, identifying with, you know, with the American people. So basically, if, you know, most of the American people were Muslim, then yeah, most likely they'll be out there, you know, practicing, you know, saying quotes from the Quran and, you know, touting Islamic cultural practices. But I mean, as far as their sincerity of being moral, you know, that's up for debate. However, you know, I do believe that.
Yeah, that's up for debate, all right. So in this light, Henry, how do you explain Bernie Sanders, who does not discuss religion? He doesn't discuss himself as having any particular religious leaning whatsoever, and discusses instead his ideological or philosophical leanings.
Well, you know, and here's the interesting thing about the, you know, the major religions of the world, quote unquote, you know, the Jewish, Islamic, Christianity. Judaism tends to be, you know, a little more, you know, they seem to be less displaying of religious beliefs than say Islam and Christianity. So I think that, you know, it's more of a culture in Jewish society where it's not closed, but, you know, they're more secretive in their religion than any of the other religions, to me. You know, just to me in my readings and my dealings with the different religions. I think Christians are more, you know, are more open in regards to their religion, and Jewish are less more open about their religions. Islam is in the middle of it. So Bernie Sanders basically to me is kind of, you know, adhering to, you know, the Jewish culture of, you know, well, religion really doesn't, you know, it shouldn't even matter, where I think realistically it matters to them, but, you know, they just don't, you know, profess it, you know, as much as, say, Christians and people who practice Islam.
Are you likely to vote based on your own religious identification with a candidate's religion?
No, not really.
No, because no, you're not.
Because you know, the thing with me is that I don't see myself as a typical public American type of person who has to factor in religion, you know, as a guide for voting. You know, I'm more of a person who deals with the historical aspect of the candidate's, you know, record, than religion. I weigh that more than anything. So.
Well, thanks a lot for adding to the discussion today. I'm looking also to get from others what they come up with about this climate. You know, thanks a lot, Henry, for your call today, I should say. Thank you. I'm looking to get a sense of what you make of this climate that has now begun to percolate at full strength, it seems, that we should now be conscious always of a candidate's religious or spiritual leanings, and the candidates themselves making a very strong effort, a very hefty effort, to make themselves known by their religious leanings. People like Huckabee and a Southern Baptist minister. You have Ted Cruz, as I said, talking about this first ad, which is about his religious beliefs and looking to appeal to a broad swath of conservative religious people. So in this climate, what are we likely to see? Where are we going with this? What is politics becoming? Are we now in an era where your religious beliefs are now part of the political mix? Is a candidate's religious beliefs supposed to be part of the mix, as opposed to, here's what I see as the problem, here's where I'm prepared to enter and be part of the solution? Now, what does this all mean? And the hegemony, it seems, that the Christians seem to want to have over this whole newly, fully opened up arena, where now it's all about religion. Who is more holy than the other? And we are now supposed to be concerned about somebody's religious beliefs, because now that gets into the added questions of, where do you stand on abortion? Where do you stand on this or that issue based on your religious beliefs? So we have, in effect, a political process that is becoming or having a lot of the very troubling ingredients of a theocratic society. From Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. How are you today?
Fine, thank you, DX. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Good morning from California, and hello to all of the PRN listeners.
Thank you so much.
My take on this, and keep in mind, I don't really get that deep into this nonsense that they call politics, and I'm not going to vote in the presidential election. So my take is that, as they do always in politics, they are catering to the lowest common denominator. Explain what I mean. I'll come at it from two angles, okay? And we're always respectful on this show, and I don't want anyone who is religious that may be listening to think that what I'm about to say is some sort of insult or anything like that. Let me just preface it that way. Studies have shown over and over and over that people who are religious are overly religious, as compared to people who are atheists or agnostic, are let's say, less intelligent overall, less likely to have a college degree, less likely lower incomes and things like that. So I think, and keep in mind, that may be skewed.
But wait a minute, where are these studies coming from that you are referring to?
I'll do some research and I'll send them to you if you would like me to.
No, but and, you should cite these things when you say them.
Well, Google it. Anyway, the thing is, back to my train of thought, this may be skewed by some of the people who are, let's say, in the South and things and things like that. I was raised Southern Baptist, so, you know, I'll leave that alone, but that's one of my things. The other thing is that when they go on this tact of bringing in religion and who's Muslim and who's Christian and all that, another way they're appealing to the sort of the lowest rung here is that they want people to react emotionally. And that distracts them from, of course, acting more logically and making a logical decision on who to vote for and who not to vote for. You see what I'm saying? So, and I would like to ask her a question, if you don't mind, that you asked Henry. If he thinks that basically you asked him if he thinks these candidates are sincere. I think all of them are phony when it comes to this. And I even suspect, now, of course I could be wrong, but this is just my opinion, the president we have now and many others we've had in the past, I suspect some of them are either agnostic, because it goes back to my earlier point. We got a real cerebral one in there now, so, you know. But that's where I'll leave it. That's just my take on the overall situation.
How did this come to be, that we are seeing such an emphasis in this particular presidential race, we're seeing such an emphasis on religion and religiosity, as opposed to, let's say, a couple of races, presidential races before this?
I'm sorry, I missed part of that. Could you say that again, please?
How did religion, in your view, emerge as a major issue in this presidential race as opposed to, say, a couple of presidential races before this?
Well, this is just the most convenient topic this time around, and I suspect it's because of all the talk when Barack Obama first got in there, all the talk of the birth certificate and is he a Muslim and all this. They saw that the reaction to that was very visceral and very immediate and emotional by some groups in this country. Of course, you know who I'm talking about. But I believe that it's because they like the reaction, and I said it's a distraction, and they're doing it to this extent this time because it's just the most convenient and the easiest distraction that they can come up with.
Is this discussion of religion and religiosity having, in your view, a significant impact on the discourse and coverage that you are seeing, every day?
On the coverage? Yes, because instead of covering a Bernie Sanders or a potential candidate like Elizabeth Warren, who really have something to say that's important, even though I don't agree with either one of them on everything, but they have something important to say. They'll have people on like Donald Trump, who I believe is going to be out of this after the first primary. So they focus on people like him, and Ben Carson says this and that and this, all this other nonsense, instead of focusing on the issues that Bernie Sanders is talking about, for example. And yes, that's the effect, is that we don't get any real discussions.
But what would you say if people say, well, look, if this is, in fact, a legitimate factor in the race, then the media are obliged to cover it?
Two things. As long as you're an American citizen, according to the Constitution and other documents, you can run for president no matter race, religion you are, because it's supposed to be separation of church and state in this country. Supposed to be. So actually, this is irrelevant from that standpoint alone. It's really irrelevant, but this is what the media does. They like to gin up all this emotion and, you know, all this nonsense to distract you from what really is going on and what you need to be concerned with. And that's because they're corporations, and they're owned by corporations.
And what about the marketing community that says, look, if you're managing a candidate's campaign and you know the lay of the land politically, your candidate has to hit some kind of a note, solid note, with a constituency, and you've carved out that constituency and the within the Republican Party as well as the Democratic Party. But particularly within the Republican Party, the key word is conservative. You got to get a conservative group. And they come up with a profile of the constituency that your people, your campaign will be marketing you to this particular constituency, and what they want to hear. This is now the thinking. I'm not saying this is what I think. This is the thinking in running a campaign. Whatever it takes to reach that group of people, they will do. Now, if those people want to hear about a candidate's beliefs in God, if these people want to appreciate how far the candidate will go, in the name of the Lord, that's what they will do. So, in effect, the candidates, if this issue of religion and religiosity become a major part of our daily news coverage, it's only because somebody's reading this thing right and doing a good job of marketing. What do you say to that?
Well, to me, this is sort of like the tail wagging the dog effect, because I don't really believe that most American people would be focusing this directly and this intently on religion if it wasn't already ginned up by people like Donald Trump and others. So I believe there are other ways to attract more liberal voters and other ways to attract more conservative voters than just focusing on religion. You get what I'm saying? But this just happens to be one of those hot-button things that they can get people all emotional about instead of being logical. Now, let's talk about conservatism. Now, the definition of conservative, it's gotten skewed over the years and the decades. I mean, a true conservative is worried about things like government spending too much and things like that. So there are other issues. And why is this one the one that you want to focus on?
Because this one is a great sell. This one gets the candidate in front of the constituency the candidate wants to reach. This one fires up that constituency. This one gets the candidate's votes.
Right, but see, who's controlling what issues get the people fired up or get them to vote for that person? I believe it's like the tail wagging the dog. I believe the media is deciding this, and whatever they push on the American people, most American people are going to want more of it, or they're going to accept it and all these other things. So let's say 10 years ago, the conservatives went in the logical direction, and they were trying to talk about issues like no government regulation over, let's just say, small businesses or whatever. That would be a subject that's close to a lot of people's hearts. But you see, they didn't go in that direction or anything like that. They went in this other direction. And so I believe it's a trained behavior on the part of the American people to even pay any attention to this nonsense here.
All right. Well, thank you so much, DX, from L.A., for contributing today. From New Jersey, Mike, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Trees. It's Michael. Am I in the air?
Thank you.
Oh, and I want to say hello to the PRN audience also. And I think this
thank
religion thing is, I think religion generally divides people, divides human beings. And it's just one of the things that divide us. And there's also class, race, socioeconomics. And these things are all fragments of human consciousness, let's say. And what politicians do is they actually feed on divisions between people, and they emphasize the divisions. And so one of the ways that people are divided is by religion. So they use that, they emphasize it. And, you know, people are generally conditioned, and the hot buttons of people are based on economic fear, social fear, and spiritual fear. So it's just one of the fears that they exploit. And what politicians tend to do is, since they realize that everything is fragmented in the environment, the social environment, the political environment, the religious environment, everything is fragmented. So what they want to do is just collect a lot of chits on the map, and they try to, you know, collect as many fragments as they can into their little pool of, until they feel that they have enough fragments that'll override the next guy's fragments that he's collecting. So it's something like what you've been saying, that people market this and they, you know, they exploit this. And they try, and I remember, you know, religion was a very big deal when George Bush was being was going for election. You know, God is talking to me; he's in my stomach or whatever. And then with Romney and Obama, they sort of downplayed it because Romney, you know, with the magic underwear and everything, they didn't want to go into that. They didn't want to go too far into that issue, so it was quiet, the whole religion thing. Very loud with George Bush and Gore. Quiet with Obama because of the magic underwear and the planets where, you know, Romney lives with God and everything. So, and now it's the megaphone is building up again because, you know, they're looking for those fragmentations of the society that they can divide. They use the divisions, they want the divisions, but they want to collect as many little fragments or bits of consciousness into their little field, and it at some point, you know, it'll outweigh everybody else's. And, you know, for the Republicans, you know, it doesn't take much.
Well, thank you so much, Mike, for your call today. But it was too short, so you got to call back again. Thank you all for contributing to this discussion. I want you to pay attention to this because it will increase. As Mike said, it is going to increase because fragmentation is really what this is all about. Or in the marketing world, they call it segmentation. You appeal to segments of a market and you amalgamate them, or you put them all together and you get a big market. So that's part of the strategy here. He was right on the nail with that. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the Global Research News Hour. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.